Okay, now we're on recording. So welcome to tonight's teleconference with Bob Kanigas and Liz Mangual. And we are so fortunate to have this pair of wonderful tellers who use their story skills not just to tell stories, but to apply them in a wide and creative range of ways. Most of you have probably seen the description that went with the announcement, so I won't repeat it here. They will be talking tonight about... help me, Bob.
The many dimensions of legacy.
The threefold legacy. Just to let them get started, please, Bob and Liz, take it away.
Are we supposed to put our phone on some kind of silent?
Exactly. Thank you. If people would do star six to put themselves on,
star six. Okay,
on mute
you.
For now, and when we get to the question and answer section, hit star six again, and you'll be back able to ask questions. So star six, and here we go.
Great, and I think we would like to call the question and answer period more of the conversation period.
Mm-hmm. So, good. Well, anyway, hello, everyone. This is Liz here, and so happy to have you join us. And we just know that we're with a heartful community of healing storytellers out there, already receiving and creating and passing on what we call a threefold legacy. And that's a term that announced itself to us just recently. And the way we think of it is has to do with the legacy that we receive, the legacy that we are living every day, and the legacy that we will pass on. And so in the short time that we have together tonight, we will try to touch on all these elements and hopefully provide a deeper sense of
where legacy leads us.
We're excited to be here with you and excited to have you join us.
We're trying to figure out if there's some way that we can get past this time space. Liz and I are looking into a computer screen, talking over Skype. Some of you are on computers, some of you are on telephones, and we thought, hey, we'll just try and do a welcoming exercise that we do when we're with people in person. So I'll get it started, and Liz will continue. So we're going to create a little virtual campfire here. Mm-hmm. The rekindling of a fire is a great metaphor for legacy. So let's just imagine we've got all the kindling. You've got the you've got the tinder. You've got the kindling. Some small sticks, some larger logs, and some big sustaining logs right in front of you. Could everybody rub your hands together until they get really warm? Till that friction creates a lot of warmth.
Send that
warmth to a little virtual campfire in front of you. Watch the smoke curl up. Watch the sparks go up into the night sky. I guess the moon is probably up there in the East Coast. It's getting low in the sky here in the West. Liz, do the next piece.
Well, now take those nice, warm-hearted hands and put them on your heart. And with gratitude, just think of someone who has passed on and who has passed a legacy on to you and you've learned something from. Just keep your hands there for a moment and think of that person. Now, Bob?
All right. Thank you. Hope everybody felt that warmth. Hope everybody's feeling warm-hearted towards yourself. So it's going to be very difficult in the next 2 days to listen to the news, read the news, without hearing the word legacy, thinking about Nelson Mandela's passing. And there will be so much talk about his legacy, and it's a very, very large, large legacy. I've been thinking about legacy because my mom passed recently, and so there's a more close family personal connection. And I know also that as a community of storytellers, we have lost some of our elders and some of our mentors, and we can also, for instance, certainly thinking about Diane Wolkstein right now. And so, you know, as we begin, let's just remember that we're involved in many, many levels of legacy. And I was thinking just this morning, there was someone on Facebook posted a letter by Archbishop Tutu to the Mandela family. And one of the things that Bishop Tutu said in this letter was that Mandela epitomized the spirit of Ubuntu. And hopefully many of you know what Ubuntu is, but in a word, it's the South African philosophy that can be expressed by I am who I am because of who we all are together. And as I thought about the spirit of Ubuntu and was preparing for this evening, I thought that that really encapsulates legacy with the largest L, which is the legacy of who we all are together. It's not just the legacy that we've received from a family member or will pass on to children or grandchildren. It's this legacy that as humanity we are constantly engaged in. So I just thought we would acknowledge that. You know, you also see legacy in all we have to do is walk down our street here and we see a legacy real estate agency and we see a legacy financial advisors. And then you think about all the other ways that legacies are used, for the legacy of sports teams and the legacy of heroes. And of course, then there's the legacy of actual financial wealth that many people talk about. So just again, to ground this conversation, we're the legacy that we are talking about here is really the intangible, the legacy of intangible things, the legacy that moves forward to make things possible, but not necessarily in the physical realm. All right. So that people ask is when they begin thinking about legacy is, you know, why do I enter this conversation or this exploration? Who am I doing this for? When I begin to think about my own legacy, the legacy that was passed on to me, or particularly the legacy that I am hoping to pass on by examining my life, who's the gift for? And we like to think that, I like to say that when you go into legacy work, you're giving a great gift both to yourselves and the people who are the most important people to you. That's we're doing it for ourselves and we're doing it for others simultaneously in our minds. Liz, do you want to say a little bit about how we define the threefold legacy? But since we sort of stumbled into this usage of legacy, Liz and I both worked at a place called Threefold Farm for a very short period of time, which is a Steiner school in Spring Valley, New York. So maybe that's where the word threefold came. But in terms of the threefold legacy, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the best way to describe it for me right now is I'd like to read a quote that I found in a in Mary Bateson book. And
actually, Liz, I think this one is from Robert Acurate.
Right. Okay. So
from a book called Family Tales and Family Wisdom, and we think this really encapsulates it.
So I'd like to read this. Can hopefully everyone can hear me pretty clearly. So at the beginning, we're what we have been given. By midlife, we make our way in the world and come to understand that we can be what we have been given and what we can create. Toward the end of life, we understand that we must give to others so that when we leave this world, we are what we have been given, have created, and have passed on.
Great. So basically, this process of legacy is really circular. It's ongoing. It's never finished. I think when I first began to think about legacy, I had this idea that legacy was almost something you could put in a package, put in a box, put in a letter, sum up a life and be done with it, pass it on and either expire or do something else. But the more that we have delved into this work, the more we really see this as a living legacy, with the legacy that we're living and creating being very, very much the bridge between what we were given and what we pass on. So I think probably we're storytellers, so I've got to tell a little, a little bit about how I have started to think about legacy or my legacy. Liz will give you a little taste from her point of view. This morning, it wasn't this morning. It's I've been thinking about this teleconference all day, but just a couple of hours ago, I found something that I had misplaced when I came back from New York. Some of you may know, I know Mike knows because he was so helpful to me in New York when I was there, that my mom passed away about 3 weeks ago. While I was there, there's a tree in front of our yard in Spring Valley, New York, that we planted for my father on his 80th birthday. He died a year later, and we scattered some of his ashes underneath that tree. My mom passed away, as we said, a few weeks ago, and we scattered some of her ashes beneath that tree. And unfortunately, most likely, we're going to have to sell that house. And I'm not at all convinced that the developers are going to spare that tree. So we began to think about what would happen if that tree was cut down or plowed under. So I saved some seeds from this eastern redbud tree, hoping that perhaps I can germinate them here. I gave some to my cousin in New England and hoping that she's going to germinate them. And then I began to think this thing about planting trees was actually a legacy that I received from my father. I had two ways of really relating to my father when we were relating well, which was, of course, not all the time. And one was through the outdoors and planting trees and transplanting trees from Maine, Dina, that are now big cone-bearing conifers. And the other way that I kind of shared with my father was through Jewish jokes and stories, which became a bridge for us. So I had that strong legacy with my father through that tree. With my mother, it was a legacy of words and of love of learning. It was a love of learning with my father too. But my mom was the one who took me to the library for the first time and helped me get my first library card. She's the one who was in two book clubs for over 40 years. So there's a little bit of this personal. There's a little taste of my personal legacy. And I thought that I'd, while I'm talking about family legacy, I thought I'd tell a little family story that has bearing on what a big subject legacy becomes. My father was a scientist, and of course, as a 7 or 8 year old, I thought that he knew everything about everything. And here's a conversation that we repeated in one form or another over the years. Dad, why is the sky blue? Why is the sky blue? You'd say, that's a good question, but I'm not exactly sure. Well, Dad, do you think there is as many stars as grains of sand? He says, well, that's a question I never thought about. Oh, Dad, what makes the rainbow colors? I know more about biology than physics. And then after that, he would say, I don't know the answers to those questions, son, but keep asking questions. It's the only way you're going to learn anything. Now go study. So that now go study was kind of a joke between us. I went back to that story. Going to turn it over to Liz here, but I think that one of the points I want to make, besides just reveling really and kind of invoking my mom and dad, is that as we have gotten more and more into sort of an examination of where this investigation of legacy goes, we're getting a lot more questions than answers. And so to everybody out there who's got your phone on mute now, when you unmute it, all I can say is just keep asking questions. It's the only way we all are going to learn anything. So, Liz.
Well, I was, one of the things that this brings up for me is that when I think of my family, my family all come from humble beginnings. And there aren't very many people in my ancestors who I can even think of having been very much educated. And so I was not brought up in a family where there was a lot of conscious philosophy that was passed down from one generation to another, or mentors who were always thinking about how they perceive the world and their own place in the world. So in some ways, because of that, when I really came into this work really through Bob, he was the one that kind of invited me to join him because we had done so much of our work together. It wasn't a comfortable thing for me. It brought up a lot of some issues, and I thought, well, does this mean that I have to? Is this a summing up of my own life? Do I have to? So I started comparing myself, and even some shame came into play, made me look at was that a lot of what I've learned has been through my observation of the world, of the people that have impacted me in ways that were not that direct, and indirect ways through kindness and love and nurturing through food. And so that's how, when I think of my own long line in my life, and that's how I find myself reflecting on it in my own legacy.
So, Liz, by the way, you just used a term long line, and that's a term that has come up. It's a term that's used in music. We find ourselves using it as we do life review, which really is what you begin to see as a pattern emerging when you do life review, and you've lived long enough to have be able to see a sort of a sweep of your life. I don't know how to pronounce it. Maybe there's somebody there later who can tell me how you pronounce Lebenslauf. But Lebenslauf, it means the sweep of life through time, and we just think that that's a really good way to think about our lives. So Liz, I think a lot about this summing up, okay? Mm-hmm. This idea that maybe we're going to have to account for our life and give mm-hmm. some value to our life. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that many or most of you who are listening tonight know that story about Rabbi Zuzia, Doug Littman has really put it out there, so and brought it to a lot of our attention. You know, for those of you who might not know it, I think he was a Hasidic rabbi. I'm not sure about that, but he was a rabbi who on his deathbed brought his followers around and said he had been thinking about what it was going to be like, what it was going to be like when he met the angels and had to account for his life. And it wasn't that he was worried that the angels would ask him, why wasn't he a great leader of his people like Moses? Why wasn't he a great teacher like the great teacher Rabbi Hillel? No, what he really was concerned about was that he would be asked, given all the opportunities that he had had in his life, why hadn't he been Zuzia? Why hadn't he been himself? So that's a story that comes to me through my tradition.
I got to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That reminds me of a conversation that we had with our now 12-year-old granddaughter, Maya. But we were with her in the Bay Area where she lives. This was maybe now 6 years ago. And she was about six at the time. We were standing with her in reverie of Maya under a tree by her house.
Oh, a tree again. It always happens under
that's
trees.
Right, it was. She had climbed the tree and we were just conversing with her. And so Bob was the one that turned to Maya and he said, and I looked at him afterwards and said, that's a ridiculous question to ask her. But he asked her, so Maya, what do you want to be when you grow up? And Maya, what do I want to be? What do I want to be? I want to be myself.
She looked at me like very theatrically, like I had just asked the stupidest question in the world. But she wanted to be herself. There was a 5 or 6 year old with the wisdom of Rabbi Zuzia, and that brings us to this point that this is a living legacy, that this is not only what we are learning as we're becoming elders and can pass on, but also that as elders we have to remain open to learning from young people. The legacy goes both ways. I think it goes all the ways simultaneously. So as you're listening, you might ask yourself now, what have I learned from a young person recently? Mm. Well, look, I'd like everybody to take, if you don't mind, we're getting perilously close to half hour anyway, but we're not quite through here. Could everybody get off mute for a minute? We're going to do an exercise here. All right. Do I hear those unmute buttons coming off?
Yep.
Are you with us? Is everybody there?
Respond to
right.
All your nasty remarks.
All right. We're going to do this. This is a little break. This is a little midway break. Having just talked about the younger generation, I think most of us on this call are people who might be said to have not been born yesterday. So I want you, everybody, to think about the younger generation for a moment. And we are going to do what we call the kvetch and stretch. Is everybody ready to kvetch and stretch?
Kvetch and stretch.
Here are the rules for the kvetch and stretch.
Okay.
Start off by going, oi.
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 Everybody say oi.
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 All right. Then you say, you know, the younger generation. Oh, the younger generation, they can't sit still for 5 minutes without twiddling their thumbs on a device. And then everybody says, oi, together.
Oi.
Okay. Now the next person just jumps in. Somebody just got to jump in and say, oi, the younger generation, and complain and kvetch. Go for it.
Don't know how to talk on the phone.
Oi.
Oi!
Oi! The younger generation can only text with their thumbs. Oi!
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 Keep going.
The younger generation doesn't know how to vote.
Exactly.
anything we say.
Oy.
Oy.
The younger generation, someone?
They don't want to listen to our stories.
Oy.
Oy.
They don't want to climb trees. Oy.
Oy.
One or two more?
The younger generations, they would just focus on one thing for a change.
Oy. And their music is so bad.
Oy. Okay, everybody, thank you for kvetching. Hopefully you were stretching while you were kvetching. Can you please put your phones back on mute for just a few more minutes?
All right.
All right. Okay. So in a moment, we're going to do just a little bit more interactive, an activity or two together, just to keep this as interactive as we can. Mike asked me yesterday as we were preparing for the call, kind of what led us to this work. I guess it was me a little bit first, and Liz has joined in. So I thought I might address that just a little bit as how this legacy work has come into my storytelling, and I think for me to as I began to reflect on that, there was just so many ways to get into it, and I think part of it was that I was very lucky. I had a chance to work around very, very, very old people in a nursing home in Alaska when I was 20 years old, and sort of demystify older people. I got to hear really incredible stories that went back all the way to the Klondike Gold Rush. So there was that. There was years of hitchhiking and listening to people's stories, so that I just had this very, very curious nature about other people's stories. Sometime back, I wish I had the magazine in front of me, but there was an issue of Coevolution Journal that had a front page article called The Gift Must Always Move, which was an article about Lewis Hyde's book, The Gift, subtitled The Erotic Life of Property. And it's about how gifts, if they don't stay in circulation in some way, just become kind of dead and useless. And this idea that you had to give a gift away to keep it alive. Some of you know I rant about the commodification of storytelling sometimes. So I think that giving away your stories is a highly generative act and necessary. So there was that. There was a very, very specific teaching when I was taking over as camp director for a camp that had 300 acres and a huge old water system. And I tried to get the caretaker who was dying of cancer to write to show me a map of where all the water lines were. This was tacit knowledge that was in his head but not written down. He didn't do it, and when the water line broke that summer, it cost us thousands of dollars in unnecessary digging. So there were these sort of larger issues of sharing and reciprocity. There were some losses, like at the camp. There was the fact that most of our family stories from the old country were gone because the first generation people didn't really want to talk about the horrors of the pogroms when they were in the United States. And there was an interaction I had with a waitress 20 years ago when I was collecting stories about gifts, who said that the greatest gift that she ever received was a gift from when her family didn't have any money for Christmas, and her grandmother decided to give her 2 days uninterrupted of her stories as the one thing that she could give, because that granddaughter was the only one that asked. So for me, it's been a slow evolution into this work. I got particularly interested in it when I learned about the concept of the ethical will, which is a non-binding, it's not a legal document, but it's a way that the shorthand is that people can pass on their values rather than their valuables to future generations. So I got interested in helping people write legacy letters or ethical wills. And as I began to do that, I actually began to realize that even that was actually quite limited and just one aspect of this work. When Liz and I did our first full-day workshop, which really was mostly focused on ethical wills, we realized that people really had a deep need to go. It really even wasn't so much the document; it was really the process of exploration, the fellowship of being with a group of people and going into these questions deeply. I see we're at we're really at our half hour, so we'd like to do one more interactive piece, and then we'll open it up for questions, and then. Before we close it down, I want to remind me if I forget. We want to kind of close with a little bit of a call to action and a challenge to everybody. So don't let us get off the phone without the call to action, all right? So can everybody unmute for a moment?
Unmuted.
Okay, are people unmuted? All right.
We are here.
Okay. So we thought that one of the things that we could do just as a group and would be to give a stab together, to give ourselves the benefit of this exercise. We're going to do it in a minute or 2 minutes instead of the hour that we really take with people. But here are also a couple of very open-ended questions that we ask ourselves or ask workshop participants that tend to get very quickly at the sort of the heart and soul of legacy. Okay, so Liz, you want to ask the first question?
Well, yeah.
And what we'll do is, as soon as you have an answer, just say it out loud. Okay, and. As soon as you hear a gap, somebody else jump in again, all right? So let's try this.
So I'm going to ask the first question by answering it, okay?
Okay.
First, and then just so to. So the first question, I have always tried to, and then you fill in the blank. So for me is, what comes up for me is I have always tried to, always, I mean, I really can see this as part of my life all along, is to be as understanding as possible of others' differences and to be as open and accepting and as I can possibly be. Another question.
Okay, so now.
So
anybody, I have always tried to. Can you answer this out loud, please?
And when you do, just tell us who you are and remind us again where you're from, okay? So I have always. Yeah.
I have always tried to be as open and welcoming and kind as possible.
Great.
Right.
Is that Mike?
That was Joe.
That was Joe. That was Joe.
Oh, Joe. I'm sorry.
Joe.
Oh, great. Okay. Thank you.
Let's
Joe.
Keep it going.
Okay. This is Mike. Go ahead.
Hello. Okay.
Ahead.
I've always tried to live each day as if it may be the last, but to make tomorrow better if it comes.
Oh, that's great. So who was that?
Dina in Maine.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay,
let's
keep going.
Keep going.
Okay, Mike, I've always tried to give my son a sense of where he's come from and also to listen where he's going.
Mm.
Great.
Thank you, Mike.
Someone else?
It's Gail. I try to make life a little easier for the elders in my life whom I love.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gail.
Let's have one more, and then we'll ask another question.
Yeah.
Someone?
I've always
Elisa?
Tried to make a difference.
I guess I have always tried to find the common humanity between myself and whoever I'm with.
Well, that's great.
Great.
Who just said that?
That was Elisa.
From
Elisa? Okay. Great.
Okay.
And the person before that, someone else said something, responded to the same question.
Yeah, that was Audrey.
Thanks.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's do one more question.
So, one of the great pleasures I've had, fill in the blank. One of the great pleasures.
This is Joe. One of the great pleasures I've had is holding my grandchildren.
I can relate to that.
And by the way, when you hear an answer like that, can you sort of see just how much is wrapped up in that in terms of legacy, treasure, deepness, values, feeling? Okay, someone else. One of the great pleasures you've had.
Sitting in a circle telling stories.
Amen, brother.
Okay. Someone
one
else
of the great pleasures I've had is enjoying Simcoe with family and friends. Good occasion, special times.
Great. Let's do one more.
And identify yourself.
This is Gail. A great pleasure is to host Passover Seder every year at my house.
That's wonderful. Wow. Okay. So how are we doing with time?
I think we probably ought to open this up.
It's a good time to go to questions.
Right. Before we do it, just in terms of this last thing that we just did, really what we have tried to do both for our in our own lives and for our own explorations, and then when we have facilitated conversations either with individuals or in groups, is to I don't want to say go beyond chronology, because I don't want to diminish like memoir writing in any way. It's very, very valuable, very, very valuable activity. The gist, or perhaps the focus of legacy, is a little bit different, which is really to, again, it's sort of back to Lebenslauf, or however you pronounce that word, trying to find the long line, the through line, themes and meanings in the activities of our life. Okay, enough said. Yesterday, I don't know if this is true or not, but someone told me that the actual meaning of the word Iroquois had to do with meeting in council and saying, I have spoken, now I will listen. So we have spoken, now we will listen.
That's actually very apt, very, very much on what I understand the word to mean, too. So that's good. Okay.
So any questions?
Or questions or
comments?
Comments or perspectives?
Everything. Go ahead.
I was interested in the idea of the. Did you say you did workshops sort of based on the idea of ethical wills? Did you say that?
Yes.
Okay, so you advertise that to people as, would you like to write your ethical will or to leave one or?
Yes. And let me say a little bit more about that. How I've done that now, just in two public workshops and just with a couple of people on an individual basis. You can get a lot of information about ethical wills on the internet. You can find templates for writing an ethical will. You don't necessarily need somebody to guide you guide you through the process. You can, you know, you can get a whole menu of the kinds of things that are included. What I'm finding is that the real benefit, if I was, you know, trying to convince somebody to join a workshop where the ethical will would be one of the things that we do is that having the fellowship, being able to sit with a dozen other people and reflect on some of these questions, really, I think, helps you do the work that really makes, you know, maybe then going back and using a template, if you have one, much more meaningful. So I'm more interested in convening people as a group.
Right. It's a great excuse to get them to share their stories and reflect. Yeah.
Focus, yeah.
Yeah.
In what you've been saying, I keep hearing legacy as a two-way gift, in which the person who is, by telling or by sharing whatever they're choosing to share, the act feeds back to themselves. Could you give us a story example of how that has been used?
Wow. Well, I think I could encapsulate it in a comment I have heard more than once when sort of drawing an elder out about in both cases it was a woman about their stories. This one was at that event that we took place that took place in the independent living place in Oakland that evening. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we spoke with somebody who had a very interesting story about her work with Eleanor Roosevelt, actually. And at the end of sharing her story and answering our questions for 20 minutes, she said, "Wow, thank you so much for asking. I didn't know I felt that way."
Mm.
That's, to me, that, you know, that's the gift of asking, and that's the gift of listening, and that's why, you know, reflecting on your story and having an opportunity to tell it, whether it's to yourself or, you know, to or with other people, is two ways. It's a gift to yourself as well as to the people that you're sharing the story with. Here's the other, you know, thing about being two ways. There's an expression that I must have come upon 30 years ago reading Trigam Trungpa's book on meditation, and he talked about the manure of experience. I don't use that term in writing too much on the website, but actually I really think it's true. He said that experience is like manure. It's really, really rich stuff, but if you don't spread it, it just piles up and piles up and piles up, and it's useless. And after a while, it begins to stink. But if you use it, it can help things grow. And so there's this other, you know, the other dimension of sharing your legacy as a gift is, you know, all of us on this call, again, you know, we weren't born yesterday. We've learned a lot of life lessons. And if we don't share those lessons, you know, the ones for better and for worse, what are we going to do with it? It becomes useless to the future. So there is this, you know, this, again, the gift must always move, or it becomes useless before.
Mm.
I don't know if that answered your question, but
thank you, Bob. Yes,
I'm answering it.
But I got another one.
You always do.
Right now, so many people seem to be discovering old photographs and posting them on Facebook, among other things. And the photos have stories, and Facebook has become one of the places where the stories are then given to others, And I wonder what you think of that, and where do you think it goes, and how useful photographs and other cues like that may be in legacy work.
Well, I think, I just want to respond to the photograph. I think photographs, and I'm sure probably a lot of people who are listening would agree with this, that they serve as a great, you know, sort of place to start a conversation with someone. We've done a lot of family workshops in a lot of different communities, and especially for me in Latino communities, where I have brought in, there's a photograph that I use of my grandmother. She's squatting on the ground. My grandmother has passed on, and this is when she died at the age of 94, about 8 years ago. And when she was 80 years old, I visited her in Puerto Rico, and I took a picture of her squatting on the ground with her very simple dress on, and she had a machete on one hand and the coconut between her knees, and she was going to split it open because she wanted to make coconut candy for me before I left the island. And that's a picture that is so evocative of my memory of my grandmother. And every time we do a workshop with families, I bring that photo out, and I'll share a story of abuela, you know, and I pass it around, show it to everyone. And from just that photograph and from sharing a simple story of her from the photograph, it evokes all kinds of stories for other people and of their own ancestors and relationships with people in their lives.
It seems to create a safe environment for sharing very, very quickly.
So I think photographs. Now, I don't know about photographs on Facebook because I'm not really a Facebook user. So
well,
I shy away from a lot of those.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, because I'm actually literally yesterday morning, my sister sent me a quote unquote storytelling site where people can create a timeline by uploading photos with short descriptions of the photos. So I think I think it's a very 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 rich field to play in, and probably there will be all kinds of applications, actual computer applications, but hopefully more living applications of people sharing photos. I mean, I just, you know, because with my mother passing away and being in the family home, I've been poring over old family photos, and it's certainly been incredibly evocative. Anybody else want to jump in on that?
Yeah.
Or ask another question? Or comment on anything that has come up?
Yes, this is Dina again in Maine, and I just I really enjoyed this teleconference because of the participation. Thank you so much for having us participate so much. The group work together made it very, very outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dina. Yeah. I mean, I think this is one of the great challenges, I think, that we have as storytellers. This technology of, you know, computer screens and phones and, you know, everything doesn't seem to be going away. I would love to be with everyone around the campfire right now. So if we can find ways to have to still maintain as much of a human element as we can, I think let's share everything that we discover about how to do that.
Great.
Yeah. Sure. I have to thank you both for just the thought and the preparation, because you did get us involved, and you generated a lot of what I call my margin notes. As I tried to make some notes, there's more in the margin, and I'll share some of those with you.
A
tree again, you know, the very nature of what stimulates memory. When you talked about the the tree. I, you know, like any good story, I find myself kind of leaving for a minute with my subconscious and going to trees that I've, and I, you know, that was a real trigger for me. And then as you get into the whole issue of the grandparents, then I actually tell a story of my granddaughter at my mom's funeral in the cemetery up in New Hampshire, where the where my grandfather carved the headstone for the plot, and my 9-year-old granddaughter plays the harp at the service. So it's great. So trees and stones are, for me, in listening to your word, generative about a lot of other stories. Now, it's not an ethical will part of it, but it was just generative, and I have to thank you for that, because I can see why, in a workshop, how things would bubble up when you begin to encourage the reflection out of people. So it was a great example of both how to try to do a technologically based presentation and just the power of some of your questions. So I appreciate that. I really do.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Joe. This is an offer that's on my legacy website. If anybody who's on the call wants to email me, I will give you two pages of some of the questions that we ask at workshops.
Great.
You know, which hopefully will be just useful for you for yourself and also in work that you do. So just bob@storyconnection.com. If you email me, I'll said that you were in on this call, I'll send you that edited list.
Thank you.
Also, I just want to mention, Joe and others, that at these workshops, we always ask people to bring, we call it a memory object or a legacy object or an heirloom object. And one thing that we, you know, and some people bring a photograph, some people bring a journal, some people bring a keepsake.
Or a piece of
music. And because memories are evoked in different mediums for different people. And that's been very, very powerful.
I could imagine.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I did that with, particularly when I used to work in senior centers, and it felt, too, that having an object took the attention away from the person who might have been very self-conscious.
Yeah.
You know, it helped people to feel brave because they were talking about something. It wasn't about them, it was very successful.
Yeah, I've seen the objects be both something talked about and talked to.
Ooh.
Mm. Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. Wow. Gotta remember.
I don't like.
Well, a lot of hmms and a lot of food for thought that's already been shared. Are there more questions? We're getting close to the 10 o'clock hour.
Unfortunately, my name is Jane and I'm in Connecticut. I came in very late. And I just wanted to know, how do I access your website?
Oh, okay. Well, there are two. There's actually three, but you can get to them all sort of through one or two. So our general storytelling website is simply storyconnection.com.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
That's kind of our commercial website. Then I have a blog that's called storytellerscampfire.com.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. And thank you for joining us. We can go a little bit beyond if people. I know some people will need to go because they've budgeted time. We can spend a few more minutes after the closing bell, but I did promise a call to action
mm-hmm.
at the end. So I think I want to. I think this is the time.
Can I do a commercial message too?
Sure.
This is supported by the Healing Storytelling Alliance, which is a working group of the National Storytelling Network, which is the national organization and guild of storytellers. storytellers for some of the folks that may be new. And we're a very a genuine group, and we don't have a big budget, but we do accept deductions that are tax-free. And you can go to our website, helixstory.org, and join, which would be great because we'd love to have members, and that's only $35 or $25 if you're already a member of NSN. And we'd love to have you stay on board. The other resource we offer is that we record these sessions, and I think at the present time we have 18 other sessions, which are in the same high standard, I'd like to say, as this evening's. And if you want to listen to those, that's also free, and we'd encourage that because we'd like to spread the word of how story can be healing and helpful to people at all stages of life. So there you go. Thank you, Bob.
How do you access the archives?
They're listed on a drop-down box in terms of if you go to publications, there'll be our newsletter, and then it'll be the conference calls. You just click on that, and they're all listed right there.
It's under resources, right?
Under resources, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a great resource, the whole website, but probably the most unheralded one is the library or the archive of these calls. And this one will be up there within about 2 days if you want to have another listen to it yourself or you'd like to refer something to it.
Thank you.
The other thing that if people are not already paying attention to is the Healing Story listserv, also accessible.
Right.
And actually the place that Bob and I first met was thanks to our sharing concepts on the listserv, and only after having done so for a while did we discover that we grew up not that far from each other, even though Bob is half a country away most of the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a blessing. Well, okay. So what we'll do is we'll close with a couple of quotes, a reading suggestion, and maybe close out the recording and the official part of the teleconference. And then Liz and I can stick around for another 10 or 15 minutes if anybody else wants to stay on. Okay. So I want to suggest a book, and I'm going to read just a short passage from it. This is kind of in the what I'm calling the call to action. And I think my guess is I'm almost certain that most of us on this call are already answering this call to action. The book is called From Aging to Saging.
Good.
a Profound New Vision of Growing Older by Zalman Schachter Shalomi. But I think if you look up From Aging to Saging, you'll find it.
I have a feeling some folks have probably heard
some ahs there.
Yep. I'm in the middle of it right now.
Really?
Great.
Yeah. I'm planning to take the class too.
Oh, that's great. By the way, this is not the quote that I was going to that I'm planning to read, but the rabbi says the only way to get it together is together.
Nice.
Great.
We're doing this. The only way to get it together is together. So thank you for all being together tonight. There's a quote from a workshop participant here that I wanted to read. He says, "In elderhood, we can derive identity more from the level of being rather than doing. As we become more contemplative, we rely less on finding self-worth through our performance in the work world. Gradually, we find another dimension opening up in which our identity comes not from what we do, but from who we are. I think that the shift from doing to being is the heart of eldering. It means minimizing the pull of the personal ego and becoming more transparent to the workings of the spirit. It's a constant learning experience, and he's devoting his life to moving in this direction. This is a call to as we more and more fall into elderhood to really think about being not so much doing. And then, Liz, you want to finish up with,
well,
with a call to action from Mary Bateson?
Well, so you want me to read
this?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I will read it.
And this is from Mary Bateson's book, Composing a Life, which is another book we highly recommend.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful book. Okay, so the quote goes, "We live longer, but we think shorter. As adults find themselves entering adulthood, making the choices that will affirm and complete the meaning of the lives they have lived, they can play a key role, contributing their perspectives and experience of adapting to change. In our day, wisdom is no longer associated with withdrawal and passivity, but with engagement with others and the contribution that Bateson calls active wisdom."
And so with that, we encourage all of us to stay engaged, to remember that your legacy is never going to be done. Stay engaged with the world and pass on, be open to learning and committed to passing on what you're learning. Thanks, everybody. This is been, personally, from my own point of view, I was a little apprehensive about how it would be to be with you through cyberspace, but I can feel your presence, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you. It was lovely.
It was just great. Thank you so much. I have to say that I just shut my eyes, and I can see the campfire still. And the moon is high in the sky, so there you go.
Oh, wonderful.
So that's such a great image. Just great.
Yeah.
Take care. I got to go. Bye.
All right.
Okay,
bye.
Bye.